strident explosion ripped the massive doors off the weakened hinges. The ton of metal fell to the cobblestones, smashing the slaves and ensign to crimson pulp. A firebird flew through the blackened gray clouds to strike a pair of cannons set behind a sandbag wall. The rocket hit a man and detonated. The blast set off the bags of powder. The resulting explosion sent the cannons in every direction. A Hummer rolled into view through the breach, its 50-caliber blaster steadily firing to finish the task. The military wag bumped over the horizontal door, and the human remains trapped underneath. Mitchum drove the wag through a crowd of startled pirates, the armored fenders smashing the bodies aside.
No prisoners!
The flintlock's long barrels extended from the open windows of nearby buildings, and mini-balls slammed into the wags, bouncing harmlessly off the body armor. The 50 caliber spoke, the heavy slugs chewing a path of destruction along the facade of the buildings, and the snipers ceased.
Find me the Outlanders!
Ace everybody else!
Mitchum pulled out his blaster and pointed it at Captain Glassman. This was the perfect chance to permanently settle the matter of who was in charge. But Glassman had been expecting the Sekhman to try a Judas strike and already had his blaster out. The two men fired in unison. When the alarm bell stopped ringing, Ensign Raynor feared the worst and got ready, laying out a line of clips from his pre-dark blaster for easy access. Even before the Sekhman arrived, he'd been standing alone to guard Homeport's rear gate. Only made sense. It was 20 miles to Dead Man's Cliff, and nobody had ever been known to get more than halfway there before getting aced. A movement in the bushes caught his attention, and Raynor blindly fired his weapon. The motion ceased, but that meant nothing, and he stayed alert. The hunters were tricky. Only the guard of the western gate was allowed to carry a bolt-action blaster, and never had to account for how much ammo he used on a shift. Baron Withers encouraged random shots to try to put some fear into the horrid muties. They were the reason the wall around the ville had been built in the first place. Sure, the hunters normally stayed in the trees and merely watched the norms, but occasionally they ventured close and stole a horse, sometimes a whole family. Even from here, the ensign could see pieces of the pre-dark ruins on top of the mesa, and he licked his lips thinking about the loot that waited up there for the first man to reach the city. But the few who tried were never seen again. However, the hunters would sometimes toss the gnawed bones over the wall, almost as if trying to give the pirates a warning. The mesa was forbidden territory, although the oldsters of the ville whispered that none of the monsters had ever been seen climbing the cliff, almost as if there was something up there that frightened them. Raynor shuddered at the thought, unable to imagine what in nuking hell could frighten a hunter. The strident detonations of the firebirds seemed to become louder, and many structures were burning out of control. But the ensign refused to leave his post until relieved from duty by the sergeant of the guard, or the enemy came and chilled him. He'd given the baron his oath, and a man meant less than a slave if he didn't keep his word. Just then, a rattling horse cart rolled out of an alleyway, a large canvas mount covering whatever was in the rear. Holding the reins was an oldster with silver hair, wrapped in a horse blanket as if bitterly cold. Instantly, the ensign suspected looters and worked the long blaster's bolt.
Keep moving. Can't use this gate.
But, sir, I've got orders from the Baron to hold these blasters outside. We're losing the battle, and I must get these blasters to our snipers.
Snipers would have their own blasters. Nobody leaves.
I have a bag of gold.
Only we use gold. Kinnison uses black powder for Jack. Now get going before I have you keelhauled for disobeying a direct order.
But I
wouldn't open the gate for anyone other than the Baron himself. Now move!
As you say. Well, I tried. Goodbye, young man.
What?
Searing pain took Raynor's chest, to be replaced with a numbing cold, and then absolute blackness that reached forever.
Christie, get the gate.
Ryan threw off the canvas sheet with his blaster. The redhead clambered from the cart and rushed over to the imposing portal. Grabbing the heavy bar, she tried to shove it aside, then had to use rocks to hammer the rusted metal bolts out of their positions. Even then, the gate itself proved to be rusted shut. This exit hadn't been used in years,
No more games. That was a damned waste of time.
Attempting to not take a life is never a waste of time, John Barrymore.
For once, we agree, old man. Just wish the path to righteousness wasn't so well paved with landmines.
Again, madam, we agree.
Trying not to grunt aloud, Jack took the old man's place at the reins, resting his hurt ankle on his folded camo jacket.
Hey, lend a hand.
Christy threw her weight against the door, with no results. JB stayed on guard while the rest of them joined the woman at her task. The gate required their combined strength to be slowly forced aside, and after Jack drove the cart through, they forced it shut again to confuse the trail. The bolts were still undone on the other side, the sentry aced, but hopefully nobody would notice for a while. Whichever side won the battle, the survivors would certainly come after them for payback. Past the gate was an open field separating the wall from the jungle, stubbly grass and flowering weeds dotting the land, showing it had been cleared by hand. But not for farming. There were no furrows or even irrigation ditches, just flat, open soil.
A clear field of fire. They expected to get attacked from this direction.
Attacked by whom? Or what?
Nearly lost in the weeds was an old path of rain-washed ruts, the wheel gullies pitted with loose stones and potholes.
Pirates don't use this much.
Which raises an interesting question. If they rule this island, why seal off the door that leads to the ruins? It's an easy climb.
Nothing there?
Maybe.
The Ville's front gate had been armed like a pre-dark tank, but the back gate was merely locked, with a lone sentry standing guard. More like they were trying to keep folks in the Ville, rather than keeping an enemy outside.
Watch for muties.
In silent agreement, the others checked their weapons and turned their backs toward one another so they could watch the jungle better. Rambling along the crude road, the cart bucked and bounced as it entered the cool shadows of the overhanging branches. Thick vines hung in clusters, each heavily dotted with differently colored flowers. Fruit festooned every branch, the grass littered with rotting peels and chewed cores. A tiny squirrel leaped from a palm tree ripe with coconuts, the limp body of a baby tarantula in its mouth. Birds were singing in every tree. A python hissed at the passing cart, and swarms of insects parted before the horse cart and its occupants, closing behind them. The companions began to feel as if they were riding a boat floating through a serene green lake of tall rushes. Then the berry-laden leaves of a tall bush abruptly parted, and something inhuman leapt out to dart across the road. Flinging itself airborne, the thing landed on the horse and grabbed hold of the reins. Caught by surprise, the horse reared on its hind legs, trying to buck off the animal. Still holding onto the reins, the mutie reached out to start throttling the mare with its second pair of arms. The humanoid creature resembled a silverback gorilla, only the animal was a deep chestnut brown, and its elongated fingers were tipped with tiny black talons. In unison, Jack and Ryan fired their blasters, the heavy slugs slamming into the huge beast less than a yard away. Only small trickles of blood were oozing from the deep wounds. Standing, Dean swung up the Weatherby, but his father was in the way, still firing the Webley. Pounding its chest, the mutie released the trembling horse and reached for the Norms. Stoically, they kept firing, but even at point-blank range, their blasters were doing almost no damage.
Try this!
JB squeezed between the men and triggered the shotgun. The pirate armory hadn't possessed any flechette rounds, but the double-aught buckshot blew off an arm. Pale fluid squirted from the beast's ghastly wound. The mutie abandoned the horse to dive at the companions. Dean, Doc, Ryan, and JB fired again while it was in midair, the quadruple blast throwing it to the dirt road.
Yeah!
Jack yanked the reins, and the wild-eyed horse started galloping away at top speed. Behind them, the gorilla rose and started giving chase in a peculiar loping sprint. Aiming for its belly, Dean tried a shot, but the moving cart made him miss. Going to the rear, Christy pulled the pin on a Gren and dropped the charge instead of throwing it. The metallic sphere bounced twice, then violently erupted between the cart and the mutie, throwing up a cloud of leaves and loose dirt.
Ah! Bastard mutie!
Jack glanced briefly over his shoulder, then turned back to pay attention to the road. The beast was dead, but tree stumps and large rocks now threatened to smash the rattling cart apart. An instant too slow in a turn, and they'd crash. but the teenager refused to reduce their speed and drove on, whipping the horse to go faster. Miles flew beneath the shaking wheels, and another of the mutie gorillas attacked as the cart slowed to splash through a shallow creek. Reddy, this time,